This encore program for Fire on the Earth was chosen based on the request from many listeners.
Ave Maria Radio and Renewal Ministries presents Fire on the Earth, a compelling look at the new evangelization through inspiring teachings, interviews, and testimonies.
Welcome, friends. This is Peter Herbeck, your host. We're beginning another week of Fire on the Earth, a program dedicated to the promotion of Catholic mission and evangelization. We're continuing to make our way through this wonderful church season, the season of Advent, when we keep an eye on and reflect on the comings of Jesus. The first time he came, born of the Virgin Mary, he took on human flesh in the incarnation to become one of us so that he could redeem us, but he will come again in glory to judge the living and the dead. And so we live between the two comings of Jesus, and it defines the reality of what is the church and what's the purpose of my life as a disciple in him. And so I'm excited to welcome a guest this week, Marcus Peter. I met Marcus recently. He's a young man originally from Malaysia. He's teaching theology at Father Gabriel Richard High School here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. He's got his MA in theology from Ave Maria University in Florida. He's done lots of preaching and mission work in Malaysia, Singapore, the Philippines, India, and different places here in the United States. And he just recently moved here to the Ann Arbor area, and I've gotten to know him and very inspired by his story. And I asked if he could come and join us. So he's going to be here with us this whole week. He's got so much to give. So I want to welcome you, Marcus.
Morning, Peter. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah.
Honestly.
No, it is really good to have you here. So tell you what, let's just begin first with your story, sort of at the beginning, you know, all the way back in Malaysia. Tell us about your family life and growing up and your spiritual journey.
Sure thing. How far back should I go? So, you know, I really do want to start with this by way of acknowledging a miracle that happened long before I appreciated it. I was born on April 25th, 1988, and my parents at best could have been classified then as nominalistic, kind of ritualistic Catholics. Nonetheless, April 25th being a feast of St. Mark, my parents had no idea, but my mother insisted that his name needs to be Marcus, and she named me after St. Mark without realizing that he would eventually become my patron saint. And they also gave me the name Benedict for that same reason. He was a scholar of sorts and a holy man in a lot of ways. And in many ways, St. Mark and St. Benedict have been watching over my life, and I attribute a lot of what's happened to me to the intercession. So yeah, I grew up in this kind of ritualistic expression of the faith. Now, the situation in Malaysia pertaining to the Catholic faith is very syncretistic at best.
What does that mean?
All religions are kind of conflated into the notion that they all possess truth in some quasi-fullness, which means, and we've heard priests preach this from the pulpit, that every religion is climbing the same mountain and all of them will reach God, albeit in different ways. So I remember as a young man listening to this, thinking, if that is the case, then there really is nothing very special about being Catholic. But I was baptized, and filial piety is a very big thing in Asia. So, and owing to that, I went through the motions of all of my sacraments. I got baptized, I received my communion, I got confirmed at age 17.
Filial piety meaning in relationship to your parents, following your parents? Is
yes,
that what you
yes.
mean by that?
Essentially, okay. Yes. Yep. In adherence to the rules that they had set up for the house. Mm-hmm. So, and one thing I do have to credit to them is this. Given the fact that they were not very immersed in the reasons for their faith, they practice a very faithful adherence to the things that were required of the faith. However, as a young man, I remember asking all these questions. Very early on, I kept asking all these questions. And this kind of principle of the intellect being ordered towards objective truth was always a driving force for me, largely due to just the influence of my father, I guess, namely. When you're young, you look up to your parents, and especially as a young man, you see your father as the most intelligent man that you've ever met. And he was a reader. He was an avid reader. And he became the kind of definition I was looking for in terms of living. And because he wasn't around, he worked as an automotive engineer with, back then, Toyota, now with a conglomerate that handles a bunch of automotive brands. Because he wasn't around, he traveled so much for work. I remember most of my childhood involved me having to figure out life on my own. And I figured if he wasn't around to answer my questions, I'd just go to the sources that he used. So mainly his books. And he had a lot of business books, business psychology books. So it was very heavy Freudian, Jungian kind of concepts. But above and beyond that, and Asia is largely influenced by this because the entire British world was influenced by John Locke, this kind of empiricist point of view that the material world is all that matters. Doubt everything until it's proven materially. I developed those notions very early on. And I remember reading these books, formulating my mind around these realities. Eventually, it became clear to me, if, for want of a better term, that material achievement and material gain were the reasons by which I should be living. And I drove myself with that. I drove myself with this impetus of constant achievement. And God became, religion became this thing we did on weekends. My parents would insist that we attended both the Saturday and Sunday morning mass, sunset and Sunday morning mass, for the reason of having a servant and do things in the church. It became this kind of ritual we constantly did. But I would notice how even with my parents, but also with the Catholic community at large, from Monday to Friday, this faith didn't define their lives. Meanwhile, on Saturday and Sunday, I'd hear from the pulpit these priests talk about this peace and love that God is supposed to bring in your life. But Catholics back then were some of the angriest people I ever knew. They were some of the most volatile friendships I had. They were also some of the people that, I mean, genuinely, my Catholic friends were the ones who were drinking at a young age and smoking and stuff like that. And it's easy to get pulled into that when that is the reality you're living with as a teenager. You want to identify with a group and you're seeking your place in the world. Life was very confusing. I remember that. And I remember my life being shrouded in darkness for so many years of my life. But it became very clear to me from a young age that if God was unintellectual, the faith in God was unintellectual, then it made sense to me that I had to ground myself in what is properly intellectual. And therefore, I came to the conclusion that God doesn't exist. And again, if all religions lead to God, and if this God that's being preached is not being lived, then why do I need this faith? Yeah. So this, amongst other reasons, is why I began espousing very atheistic beliefs from age 13 onwards. And I was actually told faith can't be explained by reason. So to me, the Catholic faith back then was the most unreasonable thing out there. And it was absurd to throw your life into it. So age 13 onwards, I developed these atheistic mindsets. Nonetheless, I was doing very well in catechesis. God blessed me with this mind of being able to absorb everything I read. Mm-hmm. So we had catechesis for a year, and you'd have a final exam at the end of the year, which would determine you moving up to the next year. And I was always doing well in those exams. All said and done, from the outset, or at least from the outside, I appeared to have everything that a Catholic boy or Catholic young man would need, but inside, I was terribly broken. In fact, I remember not even knowing the distinction between a mortal sin and a venial sin well into my 20s. This was after I came back to the church. So yeah, as an atheist, confirmation was my way out of the church. So age 17, the moment I got confirmed, it was my way out.
It's very common today for a lot of people.
I know, unfortunately, confirmation becomes this kind of non-event, and it really was a...
It becomes the exit out rather than the entrance in to full membership, yeah.
And not just full membership, but this embracing of the mission, which, in fact, one of the analogies my Sunday school teacher told me pertaining to confirmation was, imagine your life like a car. Baptism is where you start up the engine. Communion and confession, reconciliation, are where you put gas in the engine and you change the oil in the engine. But once in the lifetime of a car, you need to overhaul the engine, and that's what confirmation is. I look back thinking, that's a horrible analogy.
Yeah.
that's I mean, first of all, no analogy is sufficient when describing the mysteries of the faith. But my goodness, that's a horrible analogy.
Yeah.
And I began thinking, well, there must be other ways to give my engine an overhaul, if you will. So yeah, confirmation became this ticket out. I remember even on the day of my confirmation, I was rather bitter about a lot of things. I probably received it, I can't say in mortal sin because I didn't even know the distinction between mortal and venial sin, but I was far from a life of fully being immersed in grace. Got myself confirmed, got myself out. Very shortly after, I got involved in the music scene. So I became, one of the first things that happened was a group of friends and I started up a rap group, and we got signed to a local label very quickly. After our first show, we were picked out by this label and they asked us if we wanted to record albums with them. And that began age 18 all the way to 22 years of some of the darkest moments of my life. On top of that, I was also the lead singer and bassist of a rock band. We didn't have a label, but we were doing quite a number of gigs in a number of places. And that pretty much summed up my life. And then on top of that, I always loved the academic process. So I was doing well in school. I was achieving a bunch of things. And in the British world, we have this thing called corporate emceeing. I had a certain gift for that niche work. So I was emceeing for corporate events. I was in school doing really well. I was in the debate team going up to national level events and whatnot. Lead singer of a rock band. I was a rapper, signed to a label. I was doing concerts and performances. And then on top of that, I was also writing for a number of local publications. on the outside, I had it made. Everyone who looked at me saw that my life was fantastic. Mm-hmm. What they didn't see was the brokenness inside. And I acknowledge this now, which I would never have, in my pride, I would never have acknowledged in hindsight. Those years were truly the darkest years of my life. Mm-hmm. Of course, back then, if you asked me, I wouldn't have said that it's because I don't have God. I would have said it's because I haven't found what I'm looking for or whatever not. But I remember going to bed those years, feeling the darkness weigh down on me. And I'm not kidding when I say this. I go to
like
bed.
Like a weight, like an actual weight?
Like an actual weight. Yeah. And this was every day of my life. Hmm. This was every day of my life until age 20, especially age 13 to 20. But particularly during those years, 18 to 20, the darkness literally weighed down.
Now, this may be sound like a strange question, but was there a part of your body in particular where you'd feel the weight, like on your chest or on your, like, how, describe how you felt the weight and you were aware of it.
I want to say the entirety of my being.
Yeah.
But if I were to give a kind of concentrated area, I'd say probably from the top of my head to my upper body.
Yeah.
And yeah, I remember just this overwhelming burden that I'd go to bed with every night. And I'd go to bed wishing I wouldn't wake up the next day. I'd wake up the next day wondering why I had woken up. And that was life. And I'd put on this mask of the hyper-successful, achieving individual, and that was all there was to it. Mm-hmm. And I really was doing rather well by the world standards, but my goodness, was I broken. And this continued on. Now, in that time, because I continued to read a lot of philosophers, I also continued to read a lot of psychology, I was influenced by the God of the Gaps argument that man had these gaps of knowledge that science had not progressed to answer, so they invented this notion of God. And now that science is advancing, the gap is getting smaller and smaller. We do no longer need God, which, I mean, I thought I was very original in coming up with the notion. I didn't even come up with the term God of the Gaps. I kind of coined it as a term of social dependence, if you will. Society invents God because they depend on God. And I was publicizing this. I was a speaker. I'd get invited to speak to small groups at a time, convincing them that God didn't exist, God wasn't real. And this was my life, and it was a horrible life. I particularly targeted Catholics, because the one thing I remember about Catholics is that A, they barely knew their faith at all, and B, because it's so unreasonable a faith, give them reason and they'll want to leave the faith. And that became the reality of how I lived, and this continued on all the way until age 20. I remember, just to close up this segment for today, I remember performing at my largest concert ever. There were at least about 10,000 people there. And, oh, sorry, not 10,000, sorry, 1,000 people. 1,000 people conflated the number.
Yeah, don't worry about
my,
it.
My memory of the concert arena is still very vivid, but yeah. Gauging numbers is better. There were at least about 1,000 people there. And my mother was invited. I got them a ticket and they were invited. I got them tickets and they were invited. After the whole concert, I was super proud of myself. And then my mother tells me this is not the life you should be living. And then from that day on, she starts praying a rosary every day for me. Mm. And she gave me up to Christ and Mary and said, He is yours now. I don't know what to do.
Mm. Well, game over there, you know, with when your mother starts praying the rosary daily for you, you don't have much of a chance.
Pretty much.
Yeah. No, that's great. Thank you. We just barely scratched the surface of your story. And so we, friends, Marcus is going to be with us again tomorrow. We're going to continue the story. And I encourage you to ask some of your friends to join us in the morning. They're going to be happy to hear. They're going to be inspired by the kind of the ongoing story that's unfolding here in Marcus's life. It'll be, I think, a source of tremendous encouragement. So join us again tomorrow. This is Peter Herbeck and Marcus Peter saying, God bless you. Let's walk with the Lord. Have a great day.
Each program of Fire on the Earth with Peter Herbeck can be downloaded at AveMariaRadio.net and RenewalMinistries.net. Fire on the Earth is a production of Ave Maria Radio.
Friends, I'd like to offer you my new booklet, Does God Judge? Wow, what a question, but it's a relevant question. Scripture says we were all appointed to die once and then the judgment. We know for sure each one of us has an appointment in our future. And it takes Scripture, Catechism, and the saints to help us understand the beauty of God's plan and how we can look forward to the judgment as followers of Christ. If you'd like to get a free copy, call 1-800-282-4789 or visit renewalministries.net/FOE.